It was a good trip last week for those who went. We did not continue on in Tom Ki'ikar. We did gave a different shiur on reading the Megillah on the 14th. And depending on if you're traveling from Yerushalayim elsewhere, what it determines what sets your particular place. So anyway, that was last week's shiur. We're back to Tom Ki'ikar. I want to just start back very quickly at the beginning of the Ritva, just to launch into the rest of the Ritva. So let me just remind all of us what we were discussing in Tam Ki'ikar. Our Gemara uses the term ta'amo umamasho and ta'amo velo mamasho. The Ritva says that ta'amo velo mamasho is the same thing as ta'am ki'ikar. And the Gemara says that if you have ta'amo umamasho, then if you get malchus for that. It's asim in Torah velokin alav. The Gemara defines tama umamasho as kezayis betoch kedei achilas pras. If you have, let's just say for Rashi, you have 1/8 of iser at least keneged the heter, so that constitutes tama. That's kezayis betoch kedei achilas pras. And if you eat a pras of it, or if you eat enough to have had a kezayis of the iser within that pras, you certainly get malchus. Then the Gemara says, Tamo velo mamasho is aser, but ain lokin alav. So if you have Tamo velo mamasho, which I would choose to read, and some Rishonim do, means you have less than 1/8. Anything less than 1/8. Although a number of the Rishonim here that we're going to look at understand Tamo velo mamasho means, you to borrow the cheesecloth analogy, you had stuff that cooked inside the other, but you were able to pull what appears to be the mamashos, the physical stuff, out, even though the flavor remains inside. And so with respect to that, the Gemara had said, tamo velo mamasho is asur, but ain lokan alav. And the debate amongst the Rishonim really is, what is the nature of this isser? What is the status of the isser? So to read very quickly, I think that we had probably quickly gone through the first paragraph, but it's worth reviewing in the Ritva. The Ritva said, "V'chol shetamo v'lo mamasho, peirush kigon shenafal chelav lekidera v'nimoach. If fat fell into the pot and it dissolved, now that really the fat remains there. O shenafla sham chaticha shel iser, or if a piece of meat fell in, a viser fell in, but if it's sukua, you managed to pull it out. V'nishar sham pleitasa, and the amount, whatever flavor that piece of meat emitted into the rest of the food remains there. And how much is it? Well, we don't know. But because of that, the Ritva just observes, it's a Gemara in Chulin, demisharinon bechula. If you take a bone and you stick it into a pot and you let it cook in there and then you pull the bone out, well, how much flavor, how much of the iser is mixed in? Well, the answer is somewhere between zero and the total volume of the bone. But we don't know exactly how much. So the Gemara says that we have to be machmir and be mishar bechula because you cannot be mishar, you cannot measure, estimate with the amount that came out, because how do you know how much came out? That's what the Gemara in Chulin says in the 7th parak. And therefore,
it's fine, effective.
What?
It's fine.
In the physical world, yes. In the halachic world, no. In the halachic world, if it was hot and that bone fell in there, you know, there's no particular shear of how much time it takes to. Now, in the real world, is that the case? Of course, that's the case. Remember that the only corrective measure on this, which we don't use, but in the time of the Gemara they might have used, is kfela. You give it to a guy to taste. If you're talking about two things that have a different flavor, so even though how much time is in there, it doesn't matter. Just give it to the guy and let him taste it. So that would, in fact, take into account the issue you're raising, which is, again, very real in the physical world. But we who do not rely upon a kfela, we do not rely upon the non-Jewish cook or the non-Jewish person to taste the food and tell us he doesn't taste any of flavor X. So we just assume that when it falls in, the entire volume has now instantaneously
downloaded,
correct. Of course, where it becomes interesting is what happens if that piece of meat now falls into another pot. But for that, you'll have to study your day. Okay. So the Ritva says that v'zehu tam ki'ikar ha'amur b'meseches chulin k'debirer nohasam v'hu inyan echad b'shnei l'shonos. That's the same thing. Our Gemara here, tam v'loma masho, is the same thing as tam ki'ikar in chulin. It's just two different phrases to describe the same thing. Aser v'ein lokan alav. Perish Rabbeinu tam v'arayvetzal. To aser min ha'torah. It is a Torah prohibition. To tam ki'ikar da'oraisa. Tam ki ikar min haTorah. Now you'll ask immediately, as the Ritva, as they will broach, if it's asur min haTorah, why don't you get malchus for eating it? So he says, umihu ein lokin alav, you don't get malchus, but afal pi sheyesh bo tam haro'i l'kezai b'tei achilas bras. Even though, now let's assume for the moment, you don't actually have mamashus of a kezayis within achilas bras, but if you did have such mamashus, how much flavor would that give? Well, that's the amount of flavor that you have now. In other words, even though you pulled the bone out, the flavor of that bone is as strong as if you know, you mixed everything up and the bone remained there. So in this case, even though you have such a tam, nonetheless, you don't get malchus. The ta'am ki'ikar nafkalan me'gi'ule goyim. We learn the prohibition of flavor where there's no mamashus from the parsha in the Torah that requires hechsher kelim. It's called gi'ule nachrim. The asa rachmana b'kedera bas yom amiyos. The Torah at least prohibited, and we're going to talk about this further, but the Torah said when they came back from Midian, in Parshas Matos, that they had to kasha the kelim. Kol davar sheyavova eish tavir vaeish with the hair. Okay, Pesach's coming up. It's less than 30 days. So we'll probably do hechsher kelim before Pesach, or at least take a chazara detour for that. So the Torah says you have to kasha kelim. Why do you have to kasha kelim? After all, you know what is in the kelim? Just some flavor. So apparently, the fact that the Torah mandates that we kasha the kelim tells you that there is a problem with tasting the flavor of the non-kosher food that was in the pot. So the way we paskin, and the way the Ritva is saying just for the moment, at least the Torah prohibits cooking in a pot that the goy used within 24 hours, that was used with tray food within 24 hours. So the fact that the Torah prohibits that means that there's an iser of tam. However, what is the nature of that prohibition? So the Ritva says that v'hasam lav habo michlal asehu de'ika. The Torah doesn't say you can't have tam. The Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to eat food that was cooked in a pot that was taken from the nachwe. The Torah says you're supposed to kasher the kelim. So that's a mitzvah saseh, and therefore, since it's a mitzvah saseh, and what we infer from it is that because the Torah is telling us to kasher the kelim, we know from that you're not allowed to taste the non-kosher food, but that's still called an iser aseh or a lav haba mechlal aseh. It's not formulated in the negative fashion, and therefore you don't get malchus. Because, as a general rule, in order to get malchus, there's a hekesh between the prohibition of muzzling an ox, lo sachsom shor b'disho, which is the pasuk that immediately follows the parsha of malchus, v'hoya im bin hakos harasha. So based upon that, Chazal say that in order to get malchus for a lo sase, it has to be dumya, it has to be similar to lav d'chasima. And what is dumya, the lav d'chasima, the way we paskin? It has to be a lav sheish b'maisa. It has to be active, not a passive violation. It can't be lav hanitak lase, a lav which can be fixed by an essay. So the Rambam says, if you acquire chametz during Pesach, you wouldn't get malchus for it because there's a mitzvah of destroying it. There's a mitzvah saseh of tashbisu. The third thing is it can't be a lav shebechlolos. It can't be an overbroad lav, whatever that means. It includes many different unrelated isurim in it. And number four, it has to be formulated in the positive, in the negative sense. It has to be with lo, or it has to be with al, or hishamer, or pen. But if the Torah simply gives you a mitzvah, and a mitzvah saseh, say, but by implication, prohibits a certain kind of action, you don't get malchus because it's not formulated as lo sachsom shor b'disho. So that's why Rabbi Natan and the Ravid say that you don't get malchus for tam ki'ikar, even though it's an iser d'oraisa, because it's an iser d'oraisa formulated in the positive alav haba mechval aseh. And then they continue. Va'asya the Rabbi Yochanan our sugya, who says that tam ki'ikar is asur b'vein lokin alav kisvara da abaye de islei hachi b'perakol abasar. That was the Gemara in Chulan on the top of the page that we learned a couple of weeks ago. That Rabbi says that you see the tam ki'ikar is the raisa because the basar b'chalav. Rava pushed back against Abaye and said, you can't prove anything. Abaye wanted to know, if Tam Ki'ikar weren't already a Torah principle, then why would Basar B'Chalav be limited to a situation where you can taste the Chalav? You know, it's Vishlama if Tam Ki'ikar, that we understand when the Torah says that Los Vashel Gedibach Alevimo. We treat it like all other Yisurim, you have to be able to taste the Yisur, you have to be able to taste the milk. But if not, if Tam Ki'ikar is not Midaraisa, then fine. By all other Yisurim, Tam Ki'ikar doesn't count at all. But by Basar B'chalav, as soon as you cook meat and milk, it doesn't matter how much milk, it doesn't matter how small the amount of milk that fell in, you should still be not allowed to eat. And that's not true. So Rava says, no, you know what? Tam Kikar is not the Raisa, but you want to know why is it that Basar B'Chalav is only prohibited if you can taste the Chalav? The answer is, Derech Bishul Asra Torah, Lo Sevashel Gadi B'Chalav Yimau. The reason why you cook meat and milk, if you do it, is so that you will have the flavor of the milk in the meat. So even though Rava says it's possible, Tam Ke'ikar is only the Rabbanan, and nonetheless, the Torah, Basar B'Chalav, is only when you can taste it. So what do they do with Rava's opinion? Because after all, if it's a Machlokas Abayin Rava, presumably we're going to paskin like Rava, that Tam Ke'ikar would be the Rabbanan. So they say that the Chia Ba'almahu, the Dachidei. Rava wasn't arguing about it. He was just saying your proof is no good. But the actual Dinlo Palagala, Rava doesn't disagree with Abaye. Now, in other words, this is true all over the place in the Gemara. There's a difference between between arguing versus arguing that someone's proof is just a bad proof. So now, but there's one more Gemara with Rava. Vahida Rava b'perek yid hanoshe. We're on the seventh line in the Ritva. Vahida amar Rava b'perek yid hanoshe. Lo nitzrecha ela latam ki'ikar. Debekachim asur bezra b'sheila v'hachashari. That there, Rava suggested that the chiddush of zroa b'sheila, the Chiddush of Zroa B'Sheila, which we spoke about, the Torah says that you cook the Zroa, which belongs to the Kohen, and has the status of Truma, or Truma of Kachim, that only a Kohen can eat, and yet you cook the Zroa, forearm, Marshall, what is it, the forearm? Foreleg, forearm, what's the Zroa?
Leg or arm?
The front.
Foreleg.
Okay, the foreleg of the animal, you cook the of the El Nazir, you cook it with the rest of the aisle. So how can you cook the two together? After all, you're cooking something that's truma along with something that's not truma. So that the Torah says to do it. And the Gemara claimed that this was a chiddush. It was unique. And the chiddush that Rava suggests is that normally tam ke'ikar is prohibited by kachim, but here tam ke'ikar by kachim is permitted. The implication of that was that tam ke'ikar by hulin is not prohibited in the Torah. In other words, that the prohibition of tam is limited to karbanos, to kachim. So what do you do with that, Gemara?
You don't withdraw the mamash.
What's that?
In the El Nazir, you don't withdraw the
mamash. Sure you do.
Why? Once it's all together. Isn't it all together?
You cook it together, yeah. But then you cut the zero off and you give it to the Kohen. That's easy.
No, when it absorbs the taste, the whole thing is the mamash is there.
Whenever something absorbs taste, the mamash is there. But then you pull it out.
Okay.
So he says, La mishum the began the bechulin shari, ela mishum the maflik bein kachem the amala kachem the zroa b'sheilo chadisa hasam. It's not kachem versus chulin. It's just, in other words, chulin has the same din as regular kachem, but zroa b'sheilo is different than other kachem. All right, and then there's another. I'm going to leave aside the rest of this line. There's another nusach in the Gemara there that doesn't mention tam ke'ikar, in which case the Gemara in chulin would serve as no proof whatsoever for Rava's opinion. So the position of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ravid is that, and the Rashba as well, is that Tam Ki'ikar is an Isser de Oraisa. However, there's no Malkus because it's only an Isser Aseh. It's only a negative prohibition formulated in positively, and you don't get Malkus on that kind of a prohibition. But now he says, Ve'ein ze das Rashi zal, ve'lo das Ramban zal. Rashi and the Ramban, and you might add in this, the Rambam as well, disagree. Ela Rava Palig ad Abaye. Rava disagrees with Abaye. He's not just pushing off his proof. He's actually disagreeing. Umayda ka'amar le derech bishul asra Torah. La b'lashon d'chiyah amar la. He didn't say it as a, no, you just can't prove from that. Ela b'kushta, be'emes. In other words, truthfully, he really meant it. V'od. Now, that's question number one. V'od, di'i tam ki'ikar d'oraisa. If you want to argue that tam ki'ikar is really d'oraisa, Havadai ki asrei rachmana bigiule goyim lichlale ahadre v'ukmei belav. He says, Vadai, when the Torah prohibited giule goyim, it required hechsher kelim, lichlale ahadre. It was basically returning the prohibition of tam to its original rule, to its original klal. V'ukmei belav. What does it mean? It means the Torah said you're not allowed to eat chazir. Now you have a pot that somebody cooked chazir, and somebody cooked tarfusin, and now you cook your stuff in it, and it absorbs the flavor of chazir. So originally when the Torah said in yesterday's reading, Besa Chazir, that you can't eat it, so there the Torah meant you've got to eat the Chazir Mamish, the Mamashas. But now the Torah tells you that Ta'am is Ki'ikar. How do we know that Ta'am is Ki'ikar? We know it from the Pasuk by Gi'ulei Goyim, by Klei Midyan. We know from the obligation to Kasher Kalim that the Ta'am of Chazir is just like the Ikar of Chazir. So what does that tell you, says the Ritva? It tells you that Ta'am, eating Ta'am, is the same thing as eating the Chazir. And what's your punishment when you eat Chazir? You get Malkus, because there's a lot. This is the expression the Gemara uses, Ahadre li'isurakama. In other words, something initially it wasn't clear, it fell under the prohibition. We have a separate pasuk that tells us this falls under the prohibition. So it's not a new prohibition. It's not that there's a prohibition of Chazir, and now there's a new prohibition of Tam Ki'ikar of Chazir. No, when the Torah tells you that Tam Ki'ikar, certainly the formulation of Tam Ki'ikar is much more suggestive of that. Ta'am, the flavor, is Ki'ikar. It's as if the thing is there. So the Ritva says, you should say, Ahadre li'isurakama, and therefore you actually should get Malkus for it. And he's going to quote an example, Chadamrin or Hassan, I think we mentioned this, Ha'oved v'hagozes b'shor psuleh ha-mikdashim loke. Right? The Torah says that you're not allowed to do shear or to do work with an animal that's a karban. We're going to read it in a few weeks, the last day of Pesach. We're going to read lo sagoz b'chor sharecha ve'lo sagoz b'chor tzonecha. It's in the first aliyah of the last day of Pesach. Do not work with the b'chor of your oxen and do not shear the b'chor of your sheep. So that's talking about an animal that's kachim, a b'chor that has no mum. Then what happens is, the Torah says that if an animal is a karban and it has no mum, and before you bring it, it gets a mum, so now you redeem it. In the case of Bechor, you don't actually have to redeem it, but an animal that was dedicated to Hekdesh on your own, you redeem, and the Bechor is in that same status. It belongs to the Kohen. But at this point, once it's been redeemed, now it can be eaten. But the only heter you have is to shechted and eat it. If it dies, you can't feed it to your dogs. If it's an ox, you can't plow with it. If it's a sheep, you can't shear it. How do we know that? He says, V'hasam loksiv Bay lav behedya. There's no explicit lav. Ela denafka lad midichsiv in parshas re'eh midichsiv bay rak b'chol avas nafshachot tizbach v'ochal tov asar v'darshinan. And the Gemara interprets A, that this is talking about shor psulei hamukdashim, an animal that was a korban, got a mum, and was redeemed. And they darshin tizbach v'lo giza, you can shecht it, but you can't shear it, v'lo giza v'avoda, and you can't work with it. And then they darshin v'ochalta, that if it dies, you can't feed it to your dogs. V'ochalta v'lo l'klavecha, the only het that you have by shor psulei hamukdashim is to do shechita and to eat it, and then anybody can eat it. Now, there's no explicit lav there. The havya le lava b'mich lalasei. Vafilu hachi loke. You still get Malkos if you're choresh b'shor psulei hamukdashim. If any of you have learned the Mishnayos of Malkos, there's a Mishnah near the end of the third parak that says that yesh choresh telem echad v'chayev ala mishum shmona shemos. You do one act of plowing, you plow one furrow, and you get eight different sets of Malkos for it. And one of them is that you're plowing with shor psulei hamukdashim. So you get Malkos for using this ox, even though there's no lav. Why? So the Ritva says that because the amrina vafilu hachi loke mishum da amrinan dilechlalei ahadre krosh yehekishar mukdashim ksherim. What we say basically is that the Torah said you can't do work and you can't shear with karbanos. And now an animal gets a mum and you redeem it. But so what? It still has kedusha of a karban. And so the Torah tells you you can shecht and eat it, but you can't plow with it and you can't shear it. So once the Torah tells you that, it means for the purposes of plowing and shearing, it is like regular kachim, it's a hadre l'isurakama. It returns it to its original iser, hachanami loshna.
What's the mitzvah say?
Tizbach v'lo basar v'lo giza v'avoda. The Torah says that the Torah in Parashas Re'eh, speaking about basar taiva.
If you don't want to eat it, you don't have to eat it.
Correct. Exactly the point. Yes, even more so. Even more so. The way most Rishonim read, for example, Sam, the Torah says, l'anochri sashich. You must take interest from a guy. Most Rishonim, the Rambam understands the mitzvah saseh. Most Rishonim say, no, you don't have to lend to a guy. First, you don't have to lend to a guy. You don't have to lend with interest. You want to lend to a guy with interest, don't charge him interest. Why is it a lav? Lanochri sashich, and not to a Jew. That's exactly what it works so much better because there's no. You want to just leave the shore there until it dies and put it out the pasture and give it a 10-gun salute at its funeral and bury it. That's perfectly fine. But the point is that there's no mitzvah to eat it, but it's tizbach What you can do with it is shechted. What you can't do with it is to shear it or to plow with it.
That's different than the essay by Gulli or Kalim, where you had to.
No. If you don't want to use the Kalim, you can put them in your display case and just label it treif so nobody accidentally uses it and done.
Okay.
Now, before we go on to explain Rashi and Ramban Shita, the truth is, the question is... Rabbeinu Tam was not blind to this question. Rabbeinu Tam is cited here by the Ritva differently than we have Rabbeinu Tam cited. Rabbeinu Tam claims that for Tam Ke'ikar, you get Malkos. He says you get Malkos precisely because a Hadre Li Surakama. Right? Now, once the Torah tells you that Tam Ke'ikar, you get whatever Malkos you would get. Now, the question, the real problem is, how does Rabbeinu Tam read... What's that?
So what's the lab that it goes back to?
No. If it's chazir, it's the lab of chazir. Whatever the prohibited food that was absorbed, that's when it's just like you can't eat a pork chop, you can't eat a meat that was flavored with the taste of chazir. So the question of only difficulty for Rabbeinu Tam is, how in God's name do you read this Gemara? Tamo v'lo mamasho, osur v'ein lokin olav. So Rabbeinu Tam has an astoundingly difficult reading of this Gemara. He claims that this Gemara is talking about min bimino. Min bimino. Larry, you have that puzzled look on your face. Well, if you say min bimino, we understand why osir is only midrabanon. It is osir means, if you have less than a kezayis bechtei achilas pras, we understand why it's only osir midrabanon, because how much do you need to be mevatel something of the same kind? You just need 50+%. 51% is enough. So we understand why, if it's tamo v'lo mamasho, which where the Gemara defines explicitly is less than a kezayis b'toch techeras pras, we understand why is it that you wouldn't get malkos? Why it's not the osur is only osur d'rabanan? The real question is, what does tamo u'mamasho mean? So Rabbeinu Tam claims tamo u'mamasho means when you can still recognize the isser. In other words, it might taste the same, but the what?
Visually.
Yeah, I know, Larry. It is very puzzling, right? So Rabbeinu Tam says, no, Miyumamish can recognize the Isser. If you can recognize the Isser, it's not called the Tarovis anymore. If you eat it, when you eat that, you get Malkos. The only difficulty, and I don't remember how Rabbeinu Tam addresses this, is then the Gemara shouldn't use the term Kezayis B'toch Techilas Pras. Even if you have less than a Kezayis B'toch Techilas Pras, if it's Nikar, it's not a Tarovis, and you should get Malkos for eating that. So Rabbeinu, but be aware, I'm not... Rabbeinu Tam's reading of this Gemara is so difficult. But be aware that Rabbeinu Tam himself is quoted in Tosas here and in Chulin, I believe, as claiming that you in fact do say a hadre the isura kama. Now, how you read this Gemara? That's a very 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 big stretch from Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, but the other Rishonim, as the Ritva quotes it, including Rabbeinu Tam, say no. Tam ki'ikar is doraisa, but you don't get malchus because it's only an isser asay, and for some reason you don't say, we don't know why, a hadre li isurakama, that it now, it sort of snaps back into its original isser. Now, he continues, lekach yesh lefaresh, dahachi ka'amar, tam ovelo mamasho osur midrabanan, aval ein lokin alav. You don't get malchus for it, the tam ki'ikar la doraisa, which would be the simple reading of the Gemara. On this kind of language we use elsewhere, where the Perikid Anoshe, where they say that they talk about the Gid HaChitzon, there are two, I know nothing about the Gid Anoshe exactly, but there are apparently two Gidin, two sinews, two nerves, two somethings in the hindquarters, and one of them is Doraisa, and one of them is Dorabanan. So the Gemara says that the Panimi has Samuch Le'etzem, Osir Ve'en Lokan Alav. That's Osir, the Chitzon is Osir and Lokan Alav. And the Panimi, the inner one, is Osir, but you don't get Malkos. And the same thing, v'gabe chute chelev, certain of the strands of fat, v'hainu shasur midrabanan. And that Gemara, it's clear that it's only osur midrabanan. So the Gemara will use such lashon. One say they'll say osur v'lokan olav, and the other they say osur v'ein lokan olav. And the two osurs are not the same. The osur and lokan olav is the raisa. The osur v'ein lokan olav is only the rabbanan. Now, the question is, what do you do? How do you process? Why is it that Tam Ki'ikar is only the Rabbanan? Because you realize there's one very good source that we have seen this morning that would suggest that Tam Ki'ikar is an Issa D'Raisa. And what is that? Yehulei Nachman. And okay, you have to stop and ask yourself the following question. Put aside anything we're reading in the Gemara. The Torah says that when you purchase Kalim, when you get Kalim, they conquered them in war, from the Goyim, it's kind of for the halacha lemaisa, the bottom line, it's kind of interesting because we know that we only say that kelim that were used within the last 24 hours requiring kasher min haTorah. Right? If you have a kli that wasn't used for 24 hours and it's clean, assuming you're not cooking onions in it, so you can't make the food treif in it. You're not allowed to cook in the pot, but we say it's no sein tam lefgam. So what's fascinating, of course, for that is that according to that reading, the obligation of the Torah to kasher kelim was only if they want to use them within the first 24 hours. But more than that, the Torah has to assume, it's almost like out of a movie scene or something, that the Midianite women were busy cooking that day until the last minute. All of a sudden, the war just hit them like that, you know, 5 minutes after they stopped cooking, and the Jews took the Kalim took them back, and we're going to use that within 24 hours. Okay, but bottom line is, we do. However, we want to read the story. At least, if we paskin that Geulei Nachrim are only usher within 24 hours, because after that, it's no Saint Tom of Gam. For some reason, by the way, nobody thought to suggest in any of the Gemaras that to get around that problem, that no, it was after 24 hours, but it was talking about a Davar Charif, something which is sharp, right? Nobody mentions that possibility, right? That could have solved a whole lot of problems. But before we read on the Mitzvah, let's consider perhaps another possibility, because there's another opinion in the Gemara. Another opinion in the Gemara that it certainly fits better with the Pesukim, that the Torah prohibited using the Klei Nachrim until kashering was done. And it didn't matter if it was less than 24 hours. Now, the way that opinion is manifest in the Gemara is that opinion believes that no Sein Tam Lefgam is Aser. We have been working with an assumption based upon our Mishnah several blot back that any time that something is no Sein Tam Lefgam, that the Isser detracts from the flavor of the stuff that it flavored, that there's no prohibition of eating. We do Paskim that way. But there is a position in the Gemara where we're about to see it within the next daf, that no Sein Tam Lefgam is in fact Usser by all prohibitions. But I want to raise, so there is such a view, but I want to raise even a third possibility, which no one really seems to want to consider. That who says that, this doesn't have to be based upon purely ta'am. There are two, actually, mitzvos that were given to us in the context of the war with Midian and the Kalim. One is the mitzvah of Hagolas Kalim, of Kashering the Kalim. But there was a second mitzvah that was given. That mitzvah was the mitzvah of Tvilas Kalim. The last line, Kol davar she'evo va'esh, taviur va'esh v'taher, ach b'mei nida yischato. But it has to be purified through mei nida. Now, pshuta shel mikra, mei nida, is mei haza'ah, sprinkling, and means the waters of the paraduma, to purify it for tumas meis. But chazal darshan differently, and they say, mei nida is mayim shen nida toveles bahem. Water that a nida can do tefillah in, namely in 40 sa'ah, which is the shear of a mikvah. And from this they learn that there's an obligation to be matbil to kelim. If you buy new kelim, sparkling clean new kelim from a non-Jew, you have to do tefillas kelim. Why? So the Ran at the end of our perek cites the Yushalmi that says that it's ole mitumasan shel goyim lekdushasan shel Yisrael. That it's emerging, it's being changed in status from the impurity of non-Jews to the kedusha of the Jewish people. And this the idea here, of course, is that when we eat, it is not simply eating like animals to feed ourselves and to enjoy ourselves, but our shulchan is like a mizbeach. Right? Our act of eating is an act of kedusha, and for eating, one has to prepare oneself. So you have the mitzvah of tvilas kelim, which has nothing to do with the tarfus. It's a mitzvah of transferring from reshush shel nachi to reshush shel Yisrael, purifying the kelim. So it is possible by the same token that even if ordinarily, in fact, not only possible, there probably is such a position, even if ordinarily Tam Ki'ikar would not be prohibited in Minat Torah, in this very specific case, the Torah demands you kashur to avoid the Tam, it might be the food isn't even prohibited. It could be that if you're not allowed to cook in it, but if you did, the food is permitted, because Tam Ki'ikar is the Rabbanah. But the Torah demands, as al-Khatkhila, as a mitzvah saseh, that you purify these kelim from any of the non-kosher flavor that was in them. Marshall?
So, in most of the sugyas that you're doing for many years, all of the issues related to things that pass through the hands of or under the jurisdiction of non-Jews generally relate to the chashash of either avodah zarah or kasher.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to at least pause for a minute and talk about this, which appears to be the first sort of potentially much more troubling status crime, which is there's just a tumah of goyim that has to be rinsed off before you can use kelim at all. That's not actually a concept that I think we've sort of been discussing before.
Correct.
Rambam mentioned.
Correct.
So where else that kind of spiritual hierarchy appears in halacha, that if they, you have no chashash of any of the things we've been talking about mm-hmm. for years, but the mere fact that it was sort of created by them within their hands makes it inherently degraded and not yet fit for use by Jews.
So, the first thing I would state about that line is that the Yerushalmi's choice of language is interesting. It's not about Tumah v'Tahara, but it's about Tumah and Kedusha. And as Kedusha doesn't have an easy antonym. So probably its meaning is the absence of Kedusha to Kedusha, which I think carries a very different valence. Right? It's not a negative or pejorative quality, it's just the absence of an elevated status. It might be the better term would be chulin to kachim. Right? And just as we don't regard chulin as negative or pejorative or garbage or bad or wicked or evil or you know, something to keep away from, but we recognize the difference between chulin and kachim, so I think that would probably be the more appropriate analog here. And I think that we do have a sense that that Kedusha is sort of a second level. We certainly have a notion of Kedushas Yisrael. It's not about, for some of us, not for, I should be honest, there are some people who have, I'll call racial type theories. You know, you have a choice of how you want to read Amma Nivchar, but certainly if you want to take the Maimonidean reading, and I think that those, many of us are much more comfortable with, the being chosen for something doesn't make you inherently superior. It does imply responsibilities, and if you step up to those responsibilities, you have an elevated spiritual status. I'm perfectly comfortable with that, and that I think is what we're talking about in the Kalim. Had it said Kedusha, had it said Tumasam to Tarasam, I'm not sure what I would do with that. I'm not sure what Tara would mean there, because I'm not really sure what exactly what Tara means. But I think it's really about e Kedusha and Kedusha. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't apply to clothing or shoes that you buy made by an Anju, or doesn't apply. He's got a good point. It doesn't apply to anything else.
Well, but again, I think that this has to do with, that's why I said this has to do with the notion that a person's shulchan is like the mizbeach.
Yeah, right.
That when we eat, eating is not merely, wearing clothing is an ordinary act. But eating is supposed to be, precisely because eating is an act that we share in common with animals, we try to elevate what we're doing when we eat.
But why isn't your point about the language exactly wrong? Which is that if it said Tumah and Tahara, you could at least understand, like, in a Jewish home, Kinyan can become Tumah, and they would have to be Tavok, right? Okay. Rarely you could say, we're not sure about their status, then it sounds a lot more like a Badazar or a Kasher. I think it's actually worse that it says Kachi, in other words, it is actually this inherent notion of sort of hierarchical spirituality. I think it actually cuts the other way.
No, but I'm not uncomfortable with hierarchical spirituality. I'm uncomfortable with hierarchical internal value. It knows anybody. Remember that anybody can choose. Anybody can choose to opt for a particular religion. Right? We accept Geirim. It's not, you know, the difficulty that the we want to call it the Jewish essentialist faces. How do you accept Geirim? So much so that you get theories like the souls got mixed up, you know, and it's really a Jewish soul and so on. That's not my cup of tea. But I don't have a problem with spiritual levels.
Last question. Halacha l'maisa, what other examples are there besides Caleb Bar Shulchan where, without any of the normal halakhic categories of risk and doubt, the mere fact that it was touched by, under the jurisdiction of, etc., a non-Jew, gives it sort of a hagada type or whatever, a tefillah type requirement before it's fit for you?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything.
So this is actually a unique...
It might be. I mean, look, again, the notion of the difference in Kedusha, if you want to call it, has manifestation in many other areas. Kedusha and Anatosin between a Jew and a non-Jew. Right? In other words, and the assumption is that Nachrim have a kind of Kedushin. There is Eishes Ishbaya Nachri, but it's not Tofes because there's a difference in the level of the Kedushin and its status. It's difference in how it can be dissolved. So there are other areas where the Halacha draws certain kinds of distinctions based upon an assumption of a different status of Kedusha.
Could non-Jews have made Kalim for the Ben Amikdash?
I'll put it this way. My bet is I doubt they would ever have allowed that. But remember that here's the interesting thing. Anachri midoraisa, as far as I know, and this might be missing the point. This might be very, excuse me, using the term Pharisaic. There's no prohibition of a goy entering the mikdash. There's no. If you look in the Torah, there's a prohibition on Azar. Azar is a not. I am prohibited to enter the Mikdash. It's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs that a guy can enter. Now, already in the Second Temple period, post the Maccabean Revolt, they had put an enclosure, a chel, around the Azaras, which on Nachri, that was like the boundary for Nachri. You couldn't go past that. I think that the idea of, I have a suspicion that if a Nachri entered the Beis HaMikdash, that would be considered the greatest kind of defilement. Probably every religion actually has it that way, and yet it's not incorporated into the halacha at all. So I'm not uncomfortable with the idea that, a non-believer is not allowed in certain, under certain circumstances.
What about time? If the Nachri was able to say the
I think that in the Shulchan Aruch we rule that I don't think that Gadol Omer Agaba works by a Nachri to do the tzitzis. So
we don't make them in China.
What's that?
That's why we don't make them in China.
I guess Safra, there are actually
there's stuff. No, there's no question. There's no doubt about it. A goy cannot be mafresh truma, even with your permission. There's no shlichus for a goy in the sense of Shulchan Aruch. There are a lot of distinctions, but they're not. Again, to me, the issue is it's not a function of inherent inferiority or inherent superiority. You had a question.
Kli Midyan that was never used brand spanking new out of the box.
Yeah.
You have to kasher it.
Just hold on. Right. Kashering is only required when the assumption is that it was used with something not kosher. What's that?
Migdash Shlomo was built by Nochrim and Sidon. It was brought in constructed. It was actually hewn and cut and everything else.
No, the materials were supplied that way. Right. It's not because the building was done that way.
And if you
the stones were cut outside of it.
Correct. But in other words, the materials as so were provided. Right. Yes. But in the Second Temple period, certainly by the end, for sure, that would have seemed unlikely. So again, a goy entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what prohibition does it violate? That's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs. The Torah doesn't say explicitly. It would be unthinkable, I think. Isaac?
Just tangentially, 90% or 95% of the silver ataras made for a talis are made by non-Jews in India, but 100% of the tachrichim used in the U.S. are made by from Jews, in bush turmeric.
Okay.
Just a point.
Interesting. Right. So that might tell you the difference of why one is important and one is not, but that's a separate issue. The Aruch HaShulchan wasn't a very big fan of silver on the ataras. Okay. Anyway. Fine. So this is where it's going to get a little bit. Just the hair's got to keep our heads a little complicated. So let me give I'll identify the place, but first let me give a little bit of the background here. The Gemara and we're going to go through this quickly, but the Gemara works with the following notion. We say they do say here, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, right? B'shlosh shesed midos hatar nedrasas behin. And b'gzeir shava v'kal v'chomer, and then mibinyan av mikasav echad and mibinyan av mishnei k'suvim. What is a binyan av mikasav echad and what is a binyan av mishnei k'suvim? And this point is essential. A binyan av mikasav echad is kind of what I would term a weak kal v'chomer. A kal v'chomer says, I can lift 50 pounds, and Lenny is stronger than I am, so he can certainly lift at least 50 pounds. A binyan av would say, I'm a person, Lenny's a person, I can lift 50 pounds, presumably Lenny can lift 50 pounds as well. Okay. Now, you might have a pircha, you might say, well, maybe we're not the same, and so on, but that's what a binyan av says, basically, if Torah tells me a principle in one place, I can expand it to comparable places. In other words, if the Torah were to tell me that chazir is prohibited, and then the Torah were to tell me that tam ki'ikar of chazir is like chazir, I might reasonably say, okay, if the Torah told me that tam ki'ikar of chazir is like chazir, then tam ki'ikar of nevela is like nevela, and tam ki'ikar of gomel is like gomel, and tam ki'ikar of dam is like dam, etc. Now, it may be that when I tell you that tam ki'ikar, let's say I told you that tam ki'ikar of chametz is like chametz, if the Torah told me that, I might not be able to say tam ki'ikar of chazir is like chazir. Why? Because chametz is aser b'hana, and chametz you get kares for eating. So maybe there, the Torah said, if the Torah told me tam ki'ikar by chametz, maybe that's because chametz is such a severe prohibition, but maybe it wouldn't apply to chazir. Now, what I might do then is to turn around and find another prohibition that it does not have kares, let's say, and the Torah tells me tam ki'ikar. let's say Nevela. Okay, and then I might say, just as Nevela, the Torah treats Tam Ki'ikar as the Nevela, so too it should apply by Chazir as well. Now, hypothetically, let's say I found something that was unique to Nevela. I don't know what it would be, but unique to Nevela, an Aver Menachai. Let's say I had Chametz, and I want to learn to Chazir, but I can't learn Chazir from Chametz, because Chametz, Yichai Karesan. So I say, I have a pasuk that tells me, let's imagine, Aver Menachai, Tam of Aver Menachai is like Aver Menachai. But then I might say, you can't learn Nevela from Aver Menachai, because Aver Menachai is also even to Goyim, whereas Nevela is not. So now the Gemara will turn around and say, but look at Chametz. Chametz is not asur to Goyim, and yet Tam Ki'ikar. Then we'll say, but Chametz had Karis, but we addressed that with Avraham Nachai. That's called a binyanav mishnei ksuv. In other words, each one is, you wanted to say that A is unique and you can't learn to C because A has a special, let's say in this case, Chumrah. But I'll say that that the Chumrah of A is not what made Tam Ki'ikar asur because B doesn't have that Chumrah. But B has its own Chumrah. But A doesn't have the Chumrah B. So between A and B, I now can generalize that just as A and B are things that are prohibited to eat, and the Torah says Tam Ki Ikar, they're so true by C. And let's say in my case, Chazir, or Nevela, whatever it is. Now, that's called the Binyan Mishnei Ksuvim. And theoretically, you could have a Binyan Mishlosha Ksuvim as well. As you could keep going. If each one had a weakness and... But eventually you can put it together. It's not typically, I've never seen anything beyond three. It's usually a binyan ab mishnei ksuvim. Now, here's the corollary that comes with that. Supposing that the Torah told me that chametz is tam ki'ikar, and now let's say it told me that nevela was tam ki'ikar, and I want to learn from nevela to chazir. Now, if a Torah told me by nevela tam ki'ikar, I should be able to learn to chazir from Nevela, and there's no question about it. There's nothing that Nevela has that's so severe or stringent or chamor that I can't learn Chazir from it. Now, if I reach this conclusion, I now have a problem. What's my problem? Why do I need the pasuk by Chametz to tell me Tam Ki'ikar? And at this stage, this is what we call, this might be called, let's say, Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, where the Torah teaches me a principle more occasions than I actually need to generalize. In other words, if all you wanted to know was the Tam Ki'ikar, just tell me by Nevela, and I can learn Chazir from it, I can learn Chametz from it. The fact that the Torah repeats more than once, it repeats the principle twice, and one of them was unnecessary, is called Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, and there's already one opinion in the Gemara that once you have Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, in Melamdin, you can't use it to generalize. Contrary, these are the exceptions to the rule. Because if it was a general rule, the Torah would have told it to me just enough times to generalize. Now, there is an opinion in the Gemara, Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad Melamdin, but everybody agrees, Shlosha Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, Ein Melamdin. Once you have three, it's clear that those are the exceptions, and the rule is the exact opposite. Okay. Now, that's the background to this piece now in the Ritva. So the Ritva says, I have to find the Ritva too. Where are we? Okay, so if you look, there's a line that, like three words in parentheses, there's Lamed Zayin Amin Aleph. It's a little more than halfway down the draw. The line begins, Meseches Nazir. Okay, so starting with the. I got to go now. Go up from there, one line. To the third word, it says Ubevadai. Okay. Ubevadai. Deha milsa, the issue of Tam Ke'ikar, is a pluto de Rabbi Akiva Rabbanon hi ke de Isa beperek elu ofren. The chen b'meseches nazir. It's actually a machlokas atanayim, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, whether Tam Ke'ikar is the rice or not. U dechumle alma, everybody agrees that bechatos by a carbon chatos, u basar bechalav, and b'giule goyim, everybody agrees Tam Ke'ikar is midaraisa. But u'shar isurim, Ika plugta, there's a machlokas. The Rabbanon Savri, Tam Ki'ikar's Daraisa. The Chachamim hold, Tam Ki'ikar's Daraisa. V'chein Rabbi Akiva Aliba Dabaye, it's a machlokas Abaye and a Rava, what Rabbi Akiva holds. But according to Abaye, Rabbi Akiva also holds Tam Ki'ikar's Daraisa. Avo Rava v'Rabbi Yochanan Sfira Lahu, de la Rabbi Akiva, Tam Ki'ikar Lavda Oraisa. They hold that Rabbi Akiva holds Tam Ki'ikar's only the Rabbanon. Now, you'll ask, of course, well, number one, maybe we paskin like the Rabbanon against Rabbi Akiva, and number two, even with Rabbi Akiva, there's a machlokas. So the Ritva says, V'ilu ki Rabbanon dechule alma leka lemifsak. You cannot paskin like the Chachamim. We don't paskin like those Chachamim. He's about to explain how we know why. Once we don't paskin like the Chachamim, it means we paskin like Rabbi Akiva. What does Rabbi Akiva hold? Well, that's a machlokas abayin Rava, and the solution is simple. We paskin like Rava. So he says, "Dehasa muchach da'afilu labaye." It's true, even according to Abaye, he wouldn't paskin like the Rabbanon. The inhu svirale the giule goyim chidishu va'afilu kidera de la bas yoma asa rachmana. The shita that those chachamim hold that giulei nachrim is a chiddush and the Torah prohibits even a kli in the first day when it's not really no Saint Tam Lefgan. In other words, the chiddush of giulei nachrim according the din of giulei nachrim according to those rabbanon is not tam keikar. It's a new din. It's a special din. You're not allowed to use the goy's kalim. It doesn't matter whether the kli was used within 24 hours. It wasn't used 24 hours. Even after 24 hours, where it's no Saint Tam Lefgan, it's still aser to use. So it has nothing to do with tam keikar because it's prohibited even when you don't have tam, even when you have tam pogum. That is the rabbanon shita there, even according to Abaye. Uvehahu tama tal yehu idach svar lomar the tam kikar daraisa. Whether you learn tam kikar daraisa according to Rava, according to Abaye, is dependent precisely upon this issue. The gamrina bi baser b'chalav. Once you can't learn tam kikar from giulei nachrim, then all that's left is one source for the moment of tam kikar, and that's baser b'chalav. That's what we learn from. And velo. You see, if Giulei Nachrim taught you that Tam Kikar was Aser, and Basar B'chalav also teaches you that Tam Kikar is Aser, now it's Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, and Eim Alamdin, that would be our position. But the Rabbanon hold that Giulei Nachrim is not Tam Kikar. It's prohibited even when there's no Tam. And therefore, Basar B'chalav is, right from the moment, the Ritva says, is left alone, and that alone can teach us that Tam Kikar is the Raisa. The basa b'chalav chiddush kidi isa hasam v'chein giulei goyim chiddush. He changes his tack here, but v'chein chatas kochim the lo gamrinan mine. So for some reason the rabbanon say you can't learn from any of these three things, but v'gamrinan minozir l'chola Torah the savri mishras l'tam kikar. One thing that we didn't mention yet: the Torah says that a nazir is not allowed to eat mishras anavim. What's a mishras anavim? The pshat is it's something that you soaked the grapes in. That is the quintessential Tam Kikar. There is another reading of Mishras Anavim that Rabbi Akiva probably holds of, at least according to Rava. But so once they, somehow, now he says they discount Giulei Nachrim, that's a Chiddush. They discount Basar B'chalav, that's its own Chiddush. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. Chatas is, for whatever reason, unique. You're left with Mishras of Nazir, teaches you Tam Kikar, and from that you learn to all other Yisurim in the Torah. But Ve'ilu Anan Ha'kaimalan Giulei Goyim Lav Chiddushu. We hold that Giulei Nachrim is not a Chiddush. In other words, nothing novel. V'lo asra Torah ela kedera bas yoma. It's only when there's real time. The Hachin svarad the Rabbi Akiva the Devar HaKol. Everybody understands Rabbi Akiva that way. V'havalei, he says, Chatas v'Giulei Goyim, Shnei Ksum Habayim Ke'echar v'Eim Alamdin. Chatas and Giulei Nachrim, according to Rabbi Akiva, are two psukim that teach you the same thing, Tam Ke'ikar, and therefore they are the exceptions, not the rule. And for Mishras, he's about to say, Rabbi Akiva learns something different. He says that Usvira le de Benazir lo asra Torah tam keikar, Umishras is needed for leheter mitzdarif le'irsehudasa. I don't want to explain right now, A, because it's difficult, and B, because I have trouble explaining, what is the difference between heter mitzdarif le'irseh and tam keikar. But heter mitzdarif le'irseh on the surface sounds like the Tam Kikar, you would say that in order for there to be an Isser Torah, if it were Asim and HaTorah, there will have to have been at some point at least a Kazayas of the Isser. Heter Mitzdarif, the Isser, sounds as if I could have half a Kazayas of grapes, and I blend it together with half a Kazayas of something else, and the Heter is Mitzdarif to the Isser, I eat a Kazayas, and even though only half of the Kazayas is actual Isser, Heter is Mitzdarif the Isser, it combines with the Isser. I'm going to leave that alone for now, but it's a different din, it's not Tam Kikar. So he says, once that's the case, Uchad Rabbi Akiva Islan Lemifsak Kisvara the Rava V'Chihad Rabbi Yochanan. Once we have to paskin like Rabbi Akiva that Giulei Nachrim is a Chiddush and it's Asher all the and Giulei is not a Chiddush and the Torah only prohibits a Kedera Bas Yoma within 24 hours with Tam Ki'ikar. Now, for Rabbi Akiva, it's Shnei Ksum Abam Ke'echad Chatas and Giulei Nachrim, where we both say in those two cases, Tam Ki'ikar, but nowhere else min HaTorah. And we should paskin like the version of Rabbi Akiva, which is Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, Dabai V'Rava, Halacha K'Rava, K'Rava, Kol Shekein, Rabbi Yochanan, Kai Kavasei, Uched Barirna, as we have demonstrated earlier, in our Gemara, when we say Tama Veloma Masha, also Ein Lokan Lav, yes, because Ein Lokan Lav, it's only Midrabbanan. In other words, only by Giulei Nachrim and only by Chatas is there some type of prohibition. By Chatas, it's clear there's a prohibition of eating the Tam. I don't know for sure. I've never seen this issue discussed in Shulchan Aruch. According to Rashi, according to those Rishonim who paskin, the Tam Ki'ikar is only the Rabbanon. So, what would the din be when your Tam Ki'ikar came out of a kli? Now, it's clearly if I put my pork in a cheesecloth bag and I put it in the soup and then I pull it out and there's Tam, that Tam Ki'ikar is only the Rabbanon according to Rashi, the Ramban, and the Rambam. And the prohibition on eating the soup would only be the Rabbanon, and the Ritva is about to remind us of what the practical nafkamina is. What would they say if the Tam Ki'ikar that was in the soup was not from chazer in a cheesecloth bag, but from chazer that had previously been cooked in the pot within 24 hours? Would they say that Tam Ki'ikar, that soup is prohibited in the Torah? I don't think so. Nobody says that. I think what they would say is that you weren't allowed to cook the soup in the pot midoraisa. Once you did, maybe the Isser is only the Rabbanon. I'm not sure. In Yeridea, and what the Ritva is about to say is quoted, I mean, not from him, but it's quoted in Yeridea, it's quoted from the Rashba. Nobody draws the following. Let's read, and I'll repeat the question. He says, the nafgalan mehai piska. What's the nafgamina? Shem nafal iser bekedera shel heter ve'ein sham elatam avalo mamasho. Iser falls into heter, and you manage to pull the mamashos out. But v'kodem shi sharenu im yesham benosein tam. Before you can evaluate how much soup was in the pot, and you know how much chazir it's sitting outside in your cheesecloth bag, nishpa hamara. The soup spills, and some of it you can't recover. Now you don't know. Now you can't measure how much soup was there. Do you have shishim? Do you not have shishim? The leman de amar tam ki'ikar d'oraisa. Even though you know that there was no kazayis b'toch t'achilas pas, it's tam of lo mamasho, it's still usher, because tam ki'ikar d'oraisa, smeka d'oraisa l'chumra. Uleman de amar de rabbanon is motor. Now, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, we read the Shulchan Aruch in a previous sheet. The Shulchan Aruch paskins l'chumra, like the Rashba, like Rabbeinu Tam, that tam ki'ikar is d'oraisa, and therefore, if nishpach hamarak, by what we call mimishen omino, by min bimino, if you have kosher chicken soup, treif chicken soup, and you want to know whether there was 60 times the kosher chicken soup, there, if it spills out, as long as we know that there was a majority of kosher chicken soup, then you know for sure midoraisa it's permitted, it was batel, and therefore it's a sveka de rabbanon. But if it's the chazir that fell into the chicken soup and it's mimishen omino, and tam ki'ikar we're going to treat as a doraisa, then if you're not sure whether there was shishim, you have to be machmir. Now, so that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, but you will find sometimes that Achronim will say, listen, we pass, that's a chumra in the Shulchan Aruch, that's a machlokas harishonim. We don't paskin 100% for certain that Tam Kikir is the Raisa, but we have to be machmir. But what happens if you have another reason to be makil, if other tzedadim to be makil, so you will find that this machlokas, Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam, will be cited as another safek. I haven't seen enough of these cases, but I wonder if anybody would say that this issue of Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam would not be relevant when it comes to Kalim. Right? Would anybody say that even Rashi would be Moda, even the Ramban would be Moda, that if the suffix of whether there was Bitul HaTam was Tam that came out of a pot, Klei Nachrim, would anybody say there, oh, there Rashi would agree with Rabbeinu Tam that it's a Sveika D'Oraisa L'Chumra? I don't know. We never teach it that way, but one does wonder if, in fact, Giulei Nachrim is Tam Ki'ikar, which I think it is. That's exactly what the Torah is describing. But it's not an Ur text. It doesn't serve as a basis for everything else, you know, as a paradigm. Then it is exceptional. Why don't we apply the din mid the oraisa of Tam Ki'ikar by Klei Nachrim? I don't know whether we do or don't. It doesn't. It's not your everyday Shiloh that comes up. I want to be clear on that to get this far, but it is kind of interesting conceptual question. Okay. Let me just read quickly the end. Skip down to the third to last line in the Ritva. He just makes that. And makes actually. No, I take that back. Let's continue the next line. The Chulei Alma. This whole machlokas lo nistapku b'tam ki'ikar ela la'achar shenisarev. This is only if the stuff is actually mixed together. Avalim hu be'en the Chulei Alma doraisa. Now let me explain. What does it mean for the tam to be be'en? So he explains, Uchadetanya gabe shratim, eile hatmeim lochem, lesar tziran virotvan. If you have sherets, and you squeeze out the sherets, and you get sherets juice, right? In some sense, that's not the ikar of the sherets. Nonetheless, tam ki ikar there, to eat the sherets juice, is an issur d'oraisa. The only shaila of tam ki ikar is when it's a minority that's mixed into something else, then, you know, called Beetlejuice. Okay? Only when it's mixed into something else, where you can still, it flavors it, but it's not the stuff be'en. But when it's actually be'en, there's no question that tam is ki ikar. This is really a different sugya. For those of you, anybody now, it's a bigger crowd today, doing dafyomi, all I know is that the dafyomi this past week was torture. But one of the sugyos in there, I'm sure it's the hardest parak in Chulin, in my mind, the ninth parak. But one of the sugyos in there deals with what is the status of mashkim, hayotzim, when you squeeze fruit. What's the status of fruit juice? And various fruits, various areas of halacha. The main sugyos are actually in this parak. This really belongs to that discussion. If you squeeze what is considered ikar and what is considered tam, and so on. And he just concludes by stating the last two lines, Elu dvar ma'ruchim ma'od v'lo nitnu likasev. These things are very long inyan, and they shouldn't have been written kidei lekatze l'talmidim ach shesmatu halavavos. It's very hard to teach this. V'kasafti trumas advarim. I've just taken a little truma. I've given 2% of the sugya that I presented here. V'arotze laharach, you can look in Madura kamaisa v'sechas chulm v'psachim. I don't know how much of that we have, and this is all based upon the Ramban. So let me do even take a truma of the sugya, very briefly, and just state the following. There are, fundamentally speaking, three shitas harishonim when it comes to tam ki'ikar. The position of Rashi and the Ramban and the Rambam is that tam ki'ikar, with rare exceptions, is only midrabanan. If you have less than a kezayis b'toch kedei achilas pras, less than 1/8, then the prohibition of eating it, as a general rule, is only midrabanan. There's a second position attributed to Rabbeinu Tam by the Ritva and the Raivan and the Rashba, that tam ki'ikar is daraisa, but you don't get malchus for it because it's only an isser asay. And the isser asay is based upon hagalas klei midya. The Torah says kasher the klei midya, and by implication, you're not allowed to eat the tam that comes out of the pot when it's in your food, but that's only an isser asay, hence there's no malchus. And the third shita is that of Rabbeinu Tam, is quoted in Tosos, that tam ki'ikar is daraisa, and you actually get malchus in a regular case of tam ki'ikar, because we say ahadre the isser akama. The Torah prohibited chazir, tam wasn't in it. Once it says that tam is prohibited, it snaps back, and tam is now back in the category of chazir. Tam ki ikar, and therefore for eating the tam, for eating the food that tastes like the chazer, you actually get malchus mida oraisa. Marshall?
So I'm sorry to go back, but it seems to me that none of the analogies we brought before.
You know, you're supposed to, you know, what's the expression that's very popular now? Better to apologize than ask. So ask and then apologize. Yeah. Yes.
Sophros, Tichus, and Truma are actually completely paragraphically different. They are related to the mitzvah that either are incumbent only on Jews or require dot, so they're actually not relevant. If you had a barrel in which you were going to put wine, I assume that neither needs to be made by a Jew, nor would you do tefillah on it.
A barrel that needs... Storage, technically, even though there's not well known, storage kelim, it's only clay suda. Yeah.
So, I mean... Ultimately, what I think you're left arguing is that eating itself has a sanctification that is somehow different than all other activities, even storing wine.
Correct.
That's used specifically for sacramental purposes, even in the Beit HaMikdash, right? Because if, going back to other sugyas, as long as you knew that the wine was in treif, you could use it.
Or tame. You're going to have serious tumor problems, but midaraisa, correct.
If it was stored in barrels made by non-Jews.
Correct. In other words, putting aside technical tumah questions, because that is actually very salient. There's at least midaraisa, there's no guy is never tameh. Midrabanan, he's always tameh. But I would say it's correct. When you talk about clay suda, the din is clay suda. You know, how storage kalim, technically, if you bring me a storage clay, like a glass container that stores stuff in it, you do not make a bracha if you do tefillah on that. Correct. It's literally, it's the stuff that's meant, you know, for the final processing of the food and the consumption of the food.
So getting back to Isaac's example, I mean, it's nice that tafkichim happen to be made by from Jews, but I assume that's not a halakha requirement. Just people like to buy ones with the little, like, you know...
So Marshall, this goes back to, I think, the sense of there may not be any specific prohibition of a guy entering the Mikdash or the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it would never, ever have been allowed. Right? There's a sense that there's a certain kind of propriety, a certain kind of sanctity, I think is the term we would use, that it's just not appropriate, that a non-believer, right, is walking into the Holy, or walking into the Mikdash for that matter. I think that is the same sense. Most of the minhagim of burial are not rooted in the halacha.
Agreed.
Right? So it's not, I don't think anybody would say that you're mechuyev to use tachrichah made by a Jew.
I'm only looking at the side.
No, right.
I can give you the background why it's made by Jews.
Wait, just give me one more second.
Okay.
Isaac, the point is, at the end of the day, you're left with a sui generis category.
Okay.
It's either defensible or not, as you sort of see it. That's a personal question. But it's a sui generis category, which is final usage food kalim have this special concept.
Yes.
It's not actually necessary. I mean, you can make a parochet, you can make a ner tavli. I mean, there are a million things not
correct
to make it seem actually much more connected to holiness and worship and service of God than your shulchan does. But you're saying, be that as it may, they can make everything else in the entire world, none of it needs special sanctification, unless it's a mitzvah that's incumbent only on Jews, except for kalim shulchan.
So why we just finish with one comment on this, that there may be an issue also, when you talk about tzitzis and all those things, it's a cheftza shel kedusha. And the fact that we require tefillah on these specific kalim in itself may be the same thing. That's why my reaction to a klei shares, I couldn't conceive of them allowing. I can't point to halacha a klei shares, which is gufo kedusha. Klei shares is like a carbon. It's the only two things. The animals and klei shares are the things that have no pidyon when they're whole. Right? Because there's some type of inherent kedusha necessary to be in them. I couldn't conceive of them allowing I don't know, maybe they could. You could do tefillah on it, but Goy making the sharis.
That's not really right, because as Israel pointed out before, the cedars and...
Those don't have the same kedusha saguf.
What about the Mizbeach itself? You think every single rock was hewn only by Jewish stonemasons?
No, none.
Well, we have no way of knowing that. No, firstly, we're not told about the stones, as far as I know. And the Torah says about the wood. The wood. The wood. The wood is coming from
so the stone. This is
let's go take a look. I want to go look at that. But it's possible the Mizbeach would be different. What?
Go read the Great Sea, which is the ancient history of the Mediterranean. Yeah. None of it came from
the stones.
The Great what?
The Great Sea.
It's a book.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so
if a Jew makes a pot and he bought the steel from a non-Jew, there's no chiyuv of tefillah.
Correct.
Right, so it would be the same thing with...
Right, no, materials are not the issue, it's the clay itself.
By the way, the Midyanim, we had the mess kits of the soldiers, that's kelim, but also kelim were used as articles of war. They used to boil fat and throw it at the enemy.
Interesting.
So, they used to boil soup and throw it at them.
So that will solve the 24-hour problem. Okay, there you go. Fine, I accept that. I accept that.
No more.
Okay, Isaac, you had a last comment.
Yeah,
rebuttal.
Marshall, I'll tell you the background why it's by from Jews. Because Tachrichim only developed in the year 1626 when we have a textbook, something called the Mavri Yavot. And it connects it to the Gemara in Zvachim that talks about that the clothing that the Kohen Gadol wore, each piece of clothing was for a specific forgiveness for a certain sin. So that Rav Aaron Berechi connected it, that before you bury the body, you put on the clothing that the Kohen Gadol wore, and the Kohen Gadol's clothing had to be made by Jews, or all the Kohanim. And that's why Rav Aaron Berechi in the book Mavri Yavot says that the Tachrichim should only be made by Jews. That's the background. And that only developed in 1626. Before that, we're not sure what the Tachrichim are about.
Okay.